Yeah. Heck yeah.
That was awesome. One more here and a round of applause for Sonya English, please. Thank you so much. There we go. All right. Oh, let me get my stuff. All right. Our next speaker. Pull it up. Here we go. He's a cool guy. Here we go. Turn down just a little bit. Thank you. All right, our next speaker, Mr. Pichote. Mr. Tim Pichote is a trailblazer in the field of crypto wealth management strategies. Tim understands the challenges Bitcoin early adopters face as they struggle to get their substantial cryptocurrency gains from the virtual world to the real world without getting killed by taxes. Tim's contrarian viewpoints and handle of Austrian economics makes him an incredible asset for those who aren't looking for cookie-cutter financial advice. Tim has been helping his clients retire with a feeling of security for over a decade. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tim Pichote. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you. You have to crank it up some more. So the very beginning, how the song started off is you can't know the future if you don't know the past. And do we have a clicker? Or?
Oh, yeah. There it is. My bad.
I mean, if you want to start the first like 5 seconds over again at the 118 mark.
Yeah. We
can kind of crank it up a little bit.
Here we go. Find it real quick.
I'll learn how this thing works too. Okay, cool. All right, so that's the disclaimer while we're getting back to the song. So you guys saw the disclaimer. It's for informational purposes only. Yeah, okay, that's enough of that.
Here, turn this. Don't understand what lays ahead
if you don't understand. Yeah, I was hoping it was going to be cranked. And I'm like, yeah, that's how that's probably going to be the best introduction for any financial speech you guys have ever seen in terms of getting things uplifted and getting things rowdy. But, I think it is important that, who am I? Where are we going with the economy? But ultimately, you can't know where we're going if you don't know where we've been. And you can't trust somebody to tell you where we're going if they've been wrong in everything. So you look out into the news, whether it's, CNBC or whoever, obviously this crowd does not, watch, that sort of news. But, they're always wrong in everything when it comes to the economy. We already went over the disclaimer that I have in there, but just a quick couple of things about me. I've got a podcast that I run, so if you guys see that, hey, I like what Tim's doing up here, you guys can follow me, go to thelibertyadvisor.com, have all sorts of information there. Another thing, I really want to stress this, and my compliance department said there's a whole bunch of things I couldn't list on here, which now makes it even more like appealing, elusive, like, oh, what's Tim going to drop on me? So for anyone that texts, the number is 71441. The message is end the Fed, no spaces. And I'm going to send you my last year's talk on 2018 and 19 TDV talk. So if Jeff's here, hopefully he doesn't kick me off YouTube for doing that. So a little joke for some of you might know the inside joke on that. I got a blockchain banker 1 hour addendum to that. Basically putting like Harvard on your shoulders with that, how much information is there. And then have also an interactive risk assessment that's going on as well. And I think the clicker's going crazy. So the number is 71441 and the Fed, if you got anything I'm talking about, it resonates with you, definitely want to take off that number. Also have a free ebook that I'm going to send out as well called How It's Rigged, where I wrote a book on how they rigged the inflation numbers, the GDP data, the unemployment data, because it's all fake. All the numbers are absolutely fake. And I go through and actually tell you how they actually fake these numbers. So now we're going to talk about, is this really the greatest economy ever? I mean, we've been told on TV that this is an economic miracle, that, they said this can never be done. And, I'm here to kind of provide the contrarian advice to that. And then we're going to talk about how blockchain is disrupting traditional financial markets and get a little bit into self-directed retirement accounts. But as part of my journey on this, again, you got to know, who's up here saying this. I was running my school's endowment fund in 2007, 2008, which, a great time if you want to work in finance to graduate in 2008, an awesome time. I was specifically, am I hitting that button to bring it back to the beginning somehow? So anyways, I was running the financial stocks specifically in 2007, 2008 and made the recommendation not to buy any. And like the dean's like, no, listen, like we didn't pick you on here to say we shouldn't buy any stock. Like maybe you don't understand like what the deal is. And so they, when I graduated, all the people that inherited my fund ended up having the best track record in America. They got all the credit and, work for the Fed now and work for all these other, institutions. But that's here nor there. So actually I was also on a class on the Federal Reserve where my classmates won the national competition on it. And we were indoctrinated so heavily that the actual class saying was, in Fed we trust. I'm not even joking. That was the actual saying of the indoctrination. So it's like, how does a guy who, a millennial from New York who went to a liberal arts school end up speaking at Anarchazona? I mean, what's sort of the progression of all that? Well, I started my career the day Lehman Brothers collapsed, September 15th, 2008. Welcome to the business. And as a financial advisor, 3 years later, obtained the Certified Financial Planner designation. And then one day I had an encounter with a guy. It wasn't Rob Zombie, but it was a guy that looked exactly like Rob Zombie. And he's telling me the Federal Reserve is private. I'm like, hey, man, you know, you look like Rob Zombie, and I have the Series 7 and the 66 and this and this and that and the other thing. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to prove you wrong. And so he told me to go check out Freedom to Fascism. And then that sent me down this whole rabbit hole. And then it's really interesting about this is the guy who I wrote up here with is Ernest Hancock. And he, unbeknownst to me at the time, because I'm living in New York, he's down here. He had burned like hundreds of thousands of copies of this movie. So it's funny how everything comes full circle. That leads me to my wife buying me the book Creature from Jekyll Island, which led me to the End the Fed movement, which led me to the Ron Paul Revolution, which then encouraged me to move to Arizona, which then led me to Pirates Without Borders, freedomsphoenix.com. And ultimately, what I ended up realizing is that, you know, everyone here knows the system's not sustainable, but some people think it's not sustainable because, you know, we're $20 trillion in debt, or if we're $200 trillion in debt, whatever number they want to throw out there. But at the end of the day, it's not sustainable from day one. If the money is backed by debt, the very first dollar that was ever created, December 23rd, 1913, had 4% interest on it. If you owe 4% on the first dollar that was created, where do you get the money to pay back a dollar for? Well, then you've got to borrow another dollar, and then another dollar. So from day one, it's a Ponzi scheme that we're basically living underneath high-tech slavery from day one. It doesn't matter how much you want to balance the budget or do this or that. We are living as economic slaves, and the bigger this house of cards get, the bigger the calamity is going to get. So, you know, it's great that Donald Trump is claiming we've got the greatest economy ever, but now all that's going to happen is the free market, so to speak, is going to get the blame. Now, this was from a presentation that I made January 2017 as Donald Trump was coming into office. I gave it at the Arizona Breakfast Club in March. Ernie was there. It was at his house, so yeah, he was there. I think Frank was there. We had a few people in the crowd were there. And the premise of this talk was, listen, Trump's going to do some things to make the economy, at least people are perceived better. It's going to give people hope. And he's going to implement some tax cuts. And then what is going to happen is all this quote-unquote good news is going to mean that the Federal Reserve does now no longer has the excuse to not raise rates. The raising of the rates will then lead to the ultimate bubble crashing, which will then be the bad news. And what I thought, and I have several podcasts where I pinpointed the time frame being October to December. The reason being is that October 3rd of this past year, Jerome Powell said that the Federal Reserve rate increases were on autopilot, meaning like every quarter the rate was going to keep going up 25 basis points. Also, October is when the accumulation of having what the Federal Reserve is doing, they bought like $4.6 trillion worth of bonds, and they were saying, okay, well, we can sell $50 billion a month. And I'm like, no way. There's no way you can sell. So $600 billion a year you're going to sell. Then the Treasury needs to issue another $1.5 trillion just to cover all of our debt. There's no way, because that's going to send interest rates soaring. There's no way you can do that. Oh, and at the same time, December was going to be the last month the European Central Bank was going to have their money printing scheme going on. So all three of these things are all coalescing at the same time. And now what we've seen is the greatest acquiescence probably ever by the Federal Reserve. Well, now all the things that they said that they were going to do has now all been taken off the table. And this is like 10 standard deviations. Basically what it means is there's no traditional economist thought that anything that I was talking about back in October, or even a year before that, pinpointing that time frame, they all thought that was crazy. Well, now the opposite is happening. So now you see it's Trump effect and why bad news is good news. Before it was why good news is bad news. Well, what I mean by that is you're probably thinking, okay, well, the stock market, that's absolutely exploded to start the year. As of 2 weeks ago, it was up. I forgot my watch today, so I'm trying to see how I'm doing on time. So as of 2 weeks ago, the market was up 13%, the S&P 500 year to date. So you're thinking, okay, well, the earnings expectations, those have probably gotten better. Those have actually gone straight down. And then you're probably thinking, okay, well, the earnings per share growth, surely those have gotten higher. Nope, that's actually negative as well. And then you're probably thinking, okay, well, we probably had some really strong fourth quarter GDP data. Well, nope, actually this number, they just changed it recently, so I think now it's like 2.2. Still a pretty bad number, especially given how much debt we've had to increase everything by. And then you're probably thinking, okay, well, maybe that was just like a one-off number, and now surely we got like a great start to this year, right? You know, Q1, that's going to be great. Well, up until, you know, 2 weeks ago, the Atlanta Fed, which was the same number that all the Trump people were touting a year ago when they said it was 5.4% at one point, It didn't end up as that, but that's what they thought at the beginning of the quarter. Originally, it was at one point, it was 0.2% at one point this year. When the market was soaring higher, it was 0.2, not 5.2, 0.2. Now, just a couple days ago, they upped it to 1.5. And so I was telling all the Trump people, be very, very careful. Do not hang your hat on basically this number over here. Do not hang your hat in this 4.2%, because if you want to hang your hat on who's had the best single quarter GDP, and everyone knows, I do not like Obama, who knows me at all, Obama had a 5.1% quarter, followed by a 4.9% quarter, and also, so he had three different quarters that were actually higher than Trump. And yeah, there are stuff of things that they rigged it back then. That's a whole nother story. And so, you know, there's all sorts of shenanigans that go on. One of the shenanigans is the debt limit. So we just hit the debt. They reinstituted the debt limit, I think, a few weeks ago. And so there wasn't a debt limit for about a year and a half, first year and a half Trump was in office. And what they do, and this is something you might find this fascinating, is so when we hit the debt limit, what they do is they say, okay, we hit the debt limit, so we need to get some more money. How do we get more money? Okay, we take what's called the G fund, which is the government retirees money market fund. They just take like $300 billion and say, okay, well, now we've cleared up $300 billion. And then they do the same thing with, at least it's government pensioners' money that they're taking. I guess that's the only good news with this. And so the absolute like drop dead date of when they're going to completely be effed is October. And so that's like when they wait. They say, okay, this is like, it's crazy that this is actually how government is run and no one cares. Another perfect storm is brewing, and this has to do with demographics. So the average person spends the most amount of money in their lifetime at age 46. The baby boom happened in 1946. So you add 46 to 1946, you get 1992 when Clinton was coming in office. I've got a whole recent podcast on how basically that is the reason why Clinton did well, and some other things too with internet. You also have this affects the pensions, because in 2008, the oldest baby boomers were just turning 62 years old. So they were not actively having to actually draw from their pensions, because, I mean, most people, the earliest they draw from is 62, you know, by and large. Obviously, there's exceptions. And so they weren't actually having to pull money out. Well, now it's 11, 12 years later. Now they're 72, 73. So the next time this goes, they're not going to have 10, 11 years in order for everything to get right. And then you take a look at what the median number is, not average. So median just means like half. Like, where does half the people fall? Because, you know, you could have two people in the room, and if, you know, if I'm in the room with Mark Zuckerberg, you say, oh, well, the average person in here is worth, you know, $20 billion, and it doesn't, you know, really mean anything. So 30% of boomers, 55 to 65, have nothing saved for retirement. 26% less than 50,000, 61% less than 100,000, and basically only 22% have more than 300,000. And at 300,000, you're probably looking at maybe like $12,000 to $15,000 a year of retirement of income. And then if you think, okay, if you live, you know, 30 years, well, then now you're looking at, okay, you know, maybe that will buy me like $5,000 worth of purchasing power when I'm 90. So basically, long story short, there's where people are getting screwed on every single, all the way around. Take a look at the pensions. The best pension fund right now is 85% funded. I think they'd be screwed if they were all 100% funded based on all the demographics of how they are working out. And then you've got Illinois at 25%. I mean, what a joke. I mean, there's 0% chance. I mean, there's probably 0% chance of even Wisconsin working out, let alone Illinois. And why this is important is, assuming they were 100% funded, if the market were to go down 30% and these pensions, let's say, were pulling 4% to live off of or to pay their retirees, they would have to go up 63% over the next 3 years just to get back to even. Now imagine if you're only starting at 25% funded to begin with, and imagine if you go down more than 30%. I mean, this is just setting up for a walloping. Like, and then what is going to happen is, you know, a lot of you probably were at Anarchapoco. You probably saw the speech that that Mark Passio gave. And what a big theme of what he was talking about was, if you know the destination, you can see the journey. If you know that the destination is, we're going to have to print trillions of dollars to save, in air quotes, Medicare, to save Social Security, to save the pensions, to save whatever health scheme we come up with, you can see that there's going to be hundreds of trillions of dollars that need to be printed up to escape this problem, that it's inescapable. There's no way to possibly escape this. And so, you know, Trump did provide some, you know, temporary hope to people. He allowed corporations to repatriate their money back, which then allowed them to buy back their own shares, which then temporarily made everything look a lot better.
And so what I think is going to happen is that ultimately this is going to come crashing down because the powers that be, you know, definitely do not want him in charge. And so what is going to happen is I think you're going to see when things come crashing down, you're going to have a hardcore socialist either in 2020 or 2024 is what I'm thinking. Now, you also have to look at where we have been. So the dot plots, what this each one of these dots represents a Federal Reserve governor and where they think. They're the ones who vote on this. So I mean, they have a pretty good insight of where they think this is going to be. This is where they think interest rates will be on a 1, 2, 3, and longer term time horizon. Going back to 2012, they said that by 5 years, 5 years ago, that we'd be at 4% interest rates at the Fed funds rate. 5 years ago, this is where we're supposed to be. Then you take a look at, okay, in 2014, they said by 2 years ago, we were going to be at 3.75. Then in December 2016, they said, okay, you know, by 2020, we'll be at 3. Then by, this is just came out a week ago, you see how flat this curve is now. It's completely just going across. And what I'm guessing is they're full of crap on this too, and it's going to be actually down here or even negative because there's no way that they can that they can't raise the interest rates because if rates go up, then there's no way they can pay the interest that's going on. What this chart is, in the red is that when it's different central banks' balance sheet when they were printing money, buying bonds. The red is the Federal Reserve. Blue is ECB. Green is Bank of Japan. What you can see is basically as soon as the Federal Reserve stopped, that's right when the other central banks had to keep going, sort of like a hot potato of, okay, whose turn is it now to print money? And you see exactly how correlated the central bank asset sheets are to the S&P 500. And that was one of the central reasons why I thought the market was going to go down in October when all this stuff was really coming to fruition. Now, continuing the theme of, is this really the greatest economy ever? There is a record amount of people who are more than 90 days behind on their car payment right now. So that between a car payment and a cell phone, those are like the two things people can't live without. I mean, you need your car to get to work. And so you've got a record amount of people that are more than 3 months past due. I would say that's not the greatest sign ever. And then here I have Donald Trump in his own quotes when he was a candidate, back when I'll admit it that I did like when he was saying this stuff, that these are all the times where he talked about the unemployment rate drops only because more people are out of the labor force and have stopped working, stopped looking for work, not a real number, not a real recovery, phony numbers. And here he's saying, you know, the number's a complete fraud, the real unemployment rate's 15%, these are false numbers, phony numbers. Don't believe the 5.6%. Don't believe it. Yeah, false. Biggest. I hear 5.3% unemployment. That is the biggest joke there is in the country. That number is so false. That number is not reflective. It keeps going on, saying these are all fake numbers. And now that he's in there, he's like, have you seen that women's unemployment rate is at all-time lowest levels? The African-American, the Hispanic, the Asians have never been had lower unemployment rates. I'm like, you got to be effing kidding me. These are 19 times where you said this is joke, and here you are now saying this is like the main thing that you're holding your hat on. And then now, if I want to tell a Trump supporter this, you're like, oh, just a libtard. I'm like, oh man, I really just want to punch somebody in the face right now. So then, let's talk about trade. You know, because people say, oh, we're winning. Well, I must have a different version of winning than the president. But the trade deficit just hit an all-time high this past month, all-time high. Man, how did I keep doing that? And then, the federal deficit increased 77% in the first 4 months of fiscal 2019. It was on Drudge yesterday where we had for the first 5 months of the year, it was the highest spending ever in the past decade, including the 2000 part of the bailout that actually occurred as part of the 2009 budget. Ultimately, the Federal Reserve must choose what they're going to save. They're going to, and I'll use save in air quotes, well, I guess it is in air quotes, or actual quotes. They can either save the stock market, the bond market, or the dollar. And what I mean by that is if they want to save the stock market, they got to print a whole bunch of money, buy the bonds, create this whole artificial reality, but that's going to then destroy the dollar. And then if they want to save the bond market, well, then you got to think, well, save it from who or from what? Do you want to save the government's ability to print money and be able to finance finance all these programs we have? Or do you want to save it for retirees who actually need a real number of interest in order to be able to live? So they're damned if they do. And I gave at Anarchapoco last year, I was on Free Talk Live beforehand and actually gave this exact same analogy. Another way you value the stock market is through the CAPE ratio. Long story short, the higher the number, the more bubbly things are. The only other time things have been more basically bubbly than now were, I guess, 2 months ago, and 1929 and the dot-com crash. And why this is important, so this, my original slide, my compliance guy wouldn't want it. So essentially what this means in layman's terms is we are at this point right now where the forward 10-year return, whenever we're at this level of CAPE ratio, is only 4%. So people are taking on a massive, massive amount of risk in the stock market to eke out what historically has only been 4%. I made a video that came out October 2nd, the day before the Federal Reserve came out and said everything is great, everything's on autopilot. This is the day before. And I sent out this video to everyone that opted into my opt-in at the TDV Summit at Acapulco last year. And I sent it out to those people and my clients. This was the exact email and the video. And the video goes on to list all the reasons. It then says what I did, where I invested in the put options that exploded in value as the market crashed. This video was made, again, ahead of time. I don't have a ton of time to get into this. I know Scott's talking about crypto afterwards. But one of the things that, or a couple of the things that really intrigue me about the cryptocurrency space, well, a lot does. But one of the things is, how people raise money. You know, you had initial public offerings. Then it went into initial coin offerings. Now it's going into security token offerings. So basically, it's a way to cut out a lot of the middlemen that are there. So a lot of the Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley's, a lot of those guys are going to get cut out. But what really intrigues me is that in the future with the stock market, and again, might not be a stock market type crowd here, but what's going to happen is instead of buying the S&P 500, you're going to buy all 500 stocks at once. It's going to cost you like a penny to do so. It's going to trade instantaneously. Patrick Byrne of T0 is already basically coming out, not doing that portion of it, but I'm sure that they will. So this is just something where, you know, a lot of the guys who front run people and try to do all this shenanigans that goes on Wall Street, a lot of that's going to be cut down. There's tax reasons of why you want to do this as well. So every year, probably like 20-30% of the S&P goes down. But if you're in an index fund, you can't actually just sell those 20-30%. But if you bought all 500, you could do that. Right now, even at $5 a trade would cost you over $2,500 to do that, whereas in the future, it would probably cost, you know, just about be free. And then for me, the big thing was when I realized that blockchain was a lot more than people trading fake money back and forth, that there's actual real things that you can do with it. And I think Julian Assange said it best when he said that Bitcoin is the real Occupy Wall Street. And I'm not getting a ton into this aspect of it, but one of the presentation I gave at Anarchapoco in 2018, was on estate planning and how you could take your crypto, sell it into certain types of trusts, then get massive tax breaks for putting your money in the trust, and then the money gets paid out to you, and then you get a tax break, and then the tax break then offsets the money that gets paid to you. Little insight, Charlie Lee of Litecoin, some of you might know who he is, he sold his Litecoin to one of these types of trusts. He didn't actually really sell his Litecoin. And so you see that in Florence, that the families in 1427 are still the richest families today. And essentially, here's three really good quotes that I like. You know, for my tax evasion, I should be punished. Not necessarily that part of it. But for my tax avoidance, I should be commended. No one wants to give away their money, but everyone would want to become a philanthropist if doing so didn't cost them very much. It is literally, because when I say you give away your money, in that 1 hour addendum that I have, I go through the whole thing where, you know, I should charge you guys like $1,000 to see that hour video because I'm dropping basically like Harvard on you and it's free. And my business coach is like, why are you doing this? This is crazy. But I just know that enough people will do business with me that, you know, I don't need to, I just give away everything. There's two systems of taxation in our country, one for the informed, one for the uninformed. I think everyone wants to get informed. I also do, not to make a sales pitch here, but I also do crypto IRAs where people can have actual crypto into their IRA where they hold on to the private keys. And when I went to go speak at Anarchapoco last year as part of my journey, it was speaking on how people could sell at the top and benefit. And the broker dealer that I was with, as the price of everything was rising, forbid every advisor in America from talking about Bitcoin, crypto, all everything. I was forbidden from giving that speech. I was like, F you guys, resigned. Had to pay a five-figure fine, lost a six-figure residual income that I had coming in. My wife was not thrilled about that. And then the state of Arizona then held in my paperwork for almost all of last year. Now I'm rocking and rolling, but you know, it definitely took a big, you know, year-long self-imposed kick to the nuts for doing that. So I guess getting back to this, so a lot of anarchists or libertarians are like, well, why don't I just cash out my 401k? Why don't I just cash out my IRA? Why don't I cash out my 401k? And I was like, well, you know, I did the numbers on it. And I was like, well, if you took $100,000 out January 1st, 2017. Switch it up. Sorry about that. I don't quite have Ernie's voice, so I can't yell that loud. So a year later, if you took $100,000 out and you cashed it out, it would have been $896,000. Obviously, it'd be a lot less today. Past performance, no indication of future returns. If you would have done a Roth conversion, what would have happened is you would have had slightly over $1 million. It would have been $1,033,000, but it would have been a legal tax-free gain where you actually hold on to the private keys, because the next thing people ask me is, well, then, you know, it's still in a 401k, so the government can just confiscate it. Well, you've got the private key, so there's nothing for them to confiscate. And so, you know, in my way, I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, if you already have your money in there to begin with, you can get a legal tax-free gain versus paying the government 10% more money. I wasn't allowed for compliance reasons to put that if you make a donation to freeroths.org, so I'm not allowed to say this, that I wasn't allowed to put it on the slide. But what I'm calling this is the Ross conversion, because we want to get him out of jail. He's actually in Tucson, and Lynn's going to be moving here in a month or two. So I think that, you know, right now is the time to get him out, because with Donald Trump, I think there actually is a chance he could do a wild card thing, like possibly release him. So I've got a deal running where, you know, if people want to donate to him, and first, you know, email me first, tim@innovativewealth.com, and I've got different deals for that. I've got all different podcasts that you guys can see. And tons of different stuff. I'll be around. I don't buy. I'm not sure how I'm doing on time. I'll take some questions. Thank you for watching our latest video or listening to our latest podcast. Now, a lot of people are probably finding out about me for the very first time, and I take full responsibility for not doing a good enough job marketing myself, if that is the case. In any event, the Liberty Advisor podcast is meant to be informative with evergreen content and not just a show complaining about what's currently going on. If this is a podcast that you've only recently discovered, we'd like to invite you to check out some of our past episodes. And for some more background, the months leading up to the election, I was really mad at the Libertarian Party. Basically, they were acting like socialists. You had Bill Weld talking about gun control. And at that point, I just completely lost it and decided, you know what? I'm done representing the Libertarian Party. What I'm going to do now is try to have libertarians vote for Trump. And there is, you know, a lot of good things that Trump did do that I thought he was going to, but I didn't think it'd be the end-all be-all that all of a sudden now we've elected Trump and, all our problems are solved. But some of the other things I did was, you know, I helped popularize the term fake news, probably was one of the first, if not the first. I have not seen someone who had the list before me. What we did is I had a list called Fake News List that ended up going viral. And not saying I'm the first person to ever string those two words together, but I did think that I was probably the first person to appropriate that term from the left and at least have it go viral. But with Trump winning, I didn't think that all of a sudden, you know, it'd be a new day for America. You know, he did a lot of good things, you know, such as, you know, getting us out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. You know, we had all the different, basically prevented, you know, World War III with Russia, or at least we helped postpone that. Obviously, Hillary didn't get in, another good benefit. Now we're seeing drawdowns in the war on Syria, which, you know, Obama told us was not going to be a war. Same thing with Afghanistan as well. We get to at least keep the Second Amendment for a little while longer, although there was a bump stock ban that I was not a big fan of. And, you know, really, you know, just a ton of other things that are positives, you know, especially, you know, the culture of now knowing about fake news and not trusting the media. So, you know, I don't want to, you know, rain on this parade and make it sound like there's nothing good that's been done. But if there was, you know, 999 promises that were kept and out of 1,000, and the one thing that wasn't done was reining in the Fed or ending the Fed or, you know, shining light on the Fed. And right now, yeah, he is shining some light on the Fed, but the light is, hey, how come you're not, you know, keeping the bubble going for me too, instead of pointing out that the Fed shouldn't even exist in the first place. But, you know, that's really enough about that. And what I want to get into is I had a presentation at the Arizona Breakfast Club called The Trump Effect and Why Good News is Bad News. And really the entire premise of that is that Donald Trump coming in would be good news, at least for all the people sitting on the sidelines. And now you'd probably see the market go up. But what would happen, especially from like the repatriation of money and the tax cut, is that companies would bring their money back here. They'd buy back their own stock. That would temporarily, and again, it's important to note, this would temporarily make the stock market go up. And what I want to do is have my clients win at the end of the game. Not, doesn't matter who's winning in the third quarter. Doesn't matter. It only matters who's winning at the end of the game. So what I thought that the premise would be that all this good news would now lead to the Fed not having the excuse to not raise rates, which would then lead to bad news with the rates going up. And we've got more on this a little bit later on. But again, this was something where you guys can go back to this episode 12, I believe. And I messed up some numbering in the beginning. So actually, I don't have an episode 13. I figure, hey, if you're going to be off by one episode, 13 is probably a lucky one to leave out. Again, that was recorded from an audio camera, so not the best audio quality.
episode 10, we have an interview with Doug Casey and Ernest Hancock on Ernest Hancock Show. And that was, I ended up getting Doug, scheduled him, and figured, hey, I'd kill two birds in one stone. Great place to find out about the global economic slowdown. Episode 16 gets into, and I'm trying to find it over here, gets into, let's just try to keep finding it over here. I got to scroll down. Here we go. It's called Why America's Pension System Will Fail. The title is pretty self-explanatory, but I also get into one of the biggest risk investors face, which is sequence of return risk, and how that plays into an impending pension collapse. Highly recommend that one. We've got episode 18, which is Tim Predicts the Vol Cost. Trying to find it. There we go, right there. And on this episode of the Ernest Hancock Show, I said the worst thing someone could do. And again, the Dow was at 20, almost 27,000. And what it was, you know, the day or two before the high. And then we just recently hit a high again in late September that pretty much got just like a tiny, tiny bit over that, over where we were back in January. So the worst thing an investor can do would be short the volatility index, which in layman's terms means you're betting that the amount of volatility in the stock market would go down, and it was already at an all-time low. I thought it was the dumbest thing you could possibly do. I said it on air. 2 weeks later, that volatility index completely blew up. A lot of people were borrowing money. They were on leverage, and there was an actually, at least I know of one fund that went completely belly up. All the investors lost all their money in that fund, and there were several more that were down, you know, well over 80, 90%. And this was something I saw coming a mile away, or ended up being 2 weeks away. Episode 19, Ian Freeman of Anarchapoco, sorry, of Free Talk Live interviewed me at Anarchapoco. He's also the guy that told Roger Ver, who's also known as Bitcoin Jesus, about Bitcoin. And I'm going to play a little bit from that recording because you guys can see that this was taken in February, live at Anarchapoco. And I was just so spot on everything back then. And I, you know, it's my fault that you guys don't know about me and you weren't able to protect your portfolios ahead of time. And so I want to, you know, figure it's better late than never. And here we are going to play a little clip of that.
You know, document of ongoing financial collapse as it occurs.
So the financial collapse, now let's talk a little bit about that, and then we can talk about you and, like, you know, what your path and journey has been so far to liberty. So what kind of collapse are we talking about here? Are we talking about the collapse of the U.S. dollar?
I think ultimately it leads to the collapse of the U.S. dollar, because right now the Federal Reserve is in a rock and a hard place. That's of their own doing, so I don't feel sorry for them at all. But there's really three things they're trying to save. They're trying to save the stock market, the bond market, and the dollar. The real biggie right now is the bond market, because you've seen, for people to pay attention, the interest rates just the past 2 months have shot up dramatically. So they've gone from about 2.4% to about 2.8%, which might not sound like a lot, but when you have over $100 trillion of unfunded obligations, just imagine what that does to the interest payments. And so the Federal Reserve right now is in this pickle right now where and again, this is something that I was documenting about 13 months ago. I gave a presentation on Ernie's show called The Trump Effect and Why Good News is Bad News. And the premise is, and I'm doing this in little air quotes right now, but we've got so much good news, and again, in air quotes, good news, in terms of inflation being above 2%, the job numbers, we know they're rigged, but, you know, they're supposedly low. So the Fed is losing cover to not raise rates. So during the, you know, 8 years of Obama, it was a constant flow of bad news. So the Fed kept kicking the can down the road. They kept getting excuses to not raise rates. Well, now, you know, Trump the other day tweeted out, I don't understand why there's so much good news, yet the stock market goes down like there's bad news. I'm like, well, you should have listened to the presentation 13 months ago, because the real enchilada is not the stock market. It's the bond market. Because when the rates go up, whether it's the market dictating the rates or the Federal Reserve raising rates,
the Fed cannot save the dollar, the bond market, and the stock market. And if you listen to all my financial podcasts, you'd be able to see exactly why. And if you think that, hey, you know, this is all I have to offer in terms of podcasts that I've come out with, you'd be mistaken, because we're only about halfway through. So moving on here, we have episode 22, where it gets into Donald Trump, where he sounded like me as a candidate. And essentially, you know, either he gets into, you know, we called, you know, I think it was like 26 different times. He said that the unemployment rate was the phoniest rate ever. If you go to howitsrigged.com, I wrote a book where it outlines, you know, how the inflation rate, the unemployment rate, and the GDP data is all basically gamed. And so that episode is going to be called The Government Odds of Financial Success is Zero. So you see this right here on the screen. Episode 29 gets into, it's called Everything Will Be Fine Until the Day It's Not. And we are recording this on December 23rd, 2018 right now. And if you just look back to the past week, you'll see all that came true. So trying to find exactly where that one is. Here we go. We've got it right there. Episode 30 is a great 8-minute clip that's called The Perfect Financial Storm is Brewing, and this was produced back in May. And also recently just found out that there was another video that I made. I didn't find out. I found it because I lost it at the time or mislabeled it at the time. And it was dealing with the extreme stock market valuations. Again, this is May 2018. That episode is not released yet, but it probably will be soon, or it might already be released by the time you guys see this. Episode 32 gets into, is this really the longest recovery ever? Or I think it was called, this is the longest recovery ever. Actually, it's called Wall Street Celebrates Longest Bull Market Rally Ever, or Is It? And Potential Black Swans That Could Derail the Recovery. This was, I believe, late August. So you can go back and see that. August 21st. Episode 36 was recorded October 2nd, released October 4th. This was originally a client-only video getting into the extreme valuations of a lot of the most popular stocks that were out there, all the, you know, FANG stocks, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. Also documented how the housing and auto bubble had already burst and how I was pretty flabbergasted that nobody was actually talking about this. We've got episode, let me try to find that. So we've got episode 36. And now at this point, it's a lot easier to find the episodes because now they are numbered at this point. Hopefully by the time you're listening to this, they're already numbered. If you're watching this like in 2020 or 2019, episode 37 asks, are we in a bear market and how we're protecting our clients from this? I'd skip the first 10 minutes because, again, this was meant for clients, but if you go on from after that, I think it'll be valuable information. Episode 38 gets into how this has been the worst year on record in terms of percentage of assets that are actually in decline. You know, the name kind of gives it away. I know this name of the next one, episode 39, gives this away as well. And it says, even Jim Cramer is sounding the alarms. But unlike Cramer, I'm not playing both sides of this. So that way I've got audio clips no matter what happens. You guys can audit, you know, the 50 times I've been on Ernest Hancock Show, you know, the over 50 podcasts we have over here. Even though it's episode, you know, we're only at episode 39, we have ones that are on crypto as well. We also have tons of Facebook, I probably did, you know, 100 Facebook Lives on this before we even started the podcast. So when I say we've done over 50, it's probably closer to well over 100. We've got episode 41, which was just released today, and it's called The Global Everything Bubble. We get into it with the economist John Sneason of World Alternative Media. And this podcast really differs from a lot of the other ones because we spend a great deal of time getting into what's happening around the world, not just America. And John's an awesome person to break all this stuff down. And as you can see, you know, not too many Trump supporters were warning about, you know, Trump stepping into this trap that was going to be laid by the Federal Reserve. I was warning about this well before before he was even in office, January 2017, I was warning about this. Also, how many financial advisors correctly predicted Trump was going to win, but then were smart enough to not be fooled and have everybody go 100% aggressive, but then also position clients to take basically to help protect themselves when the interest rates did rise and when the central bank asset purchases would eventually be halted, because that's the time when, you know, we really see who's left swimming naked. So our clients own the major stock averages, rode the market up all the way. And then we, in mid-2018, we put them in put options, which have soared in value, in some cases up over 200% the past 2 weeks, depending on which what put option we're talking about. And if you don't know anything about options, the last thing I would do is start trading options on this, as it would be just same thing like Bitcoin. If you don't know anything about Bitcoin, don't get into Bitcoin and don't get into options either if you don't know what you're talking about. But you know, as the market continues to deteriorate, our clients will be able to invest into assets on sale. And this was a strategy to be kind of the least worst off, where yeah, you'd still lose money, but you would be a finite amount of money you can lose. And in most cases, it's low single digits losses or high single digit losses, depending on when they move their money over from one custodian to another to take advantage of that strategy. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, odds are your financial advisor knows nothing about knows nothing about the financial market, knows nothing about central banking, knows nothing about Austrian economics, knows nothing about blockchain. So we invite you guys to give us a try. We can tell you exactly how much risk is in your portfolio. We could tell you if 2007-08 were to happen again, how much we would expect you to go down. And then ideally, we'd show you a recommended portfolio that would probably have a lot more upside. I can pretty much guarantee you'd have less downside, unless you're just camping out 100% in cash, and it probably would have less downside risk unless the government decides, hey, we're going to print $10 trillion, and now all of a sudden your portfolio was exposed to massive inflation risk, because now that could make the market soar and you would have been left out. So, you know, you can't just keep everything in cash permanently, because that's a good way to go broke safely, although there is, you know, use cases for keeping cash if you've got the balls to go back in and invest back when nobody wants to. But I'd invite you guys all to head over to thelibertyadvisor.com to not only subscribe to the podcast, but also to check, make an appointment with us. We can help secure your investments, put you on a better path to take advantage of what we see coming down the pipeline. And, you know, this is subject to change. As central bank policy changes, at some point our strategy will change as well. But in the meantime,